This November, I'm going back to Italy, leading a food tour there, and I want to brush up on my Italian. And for that, I'm turning to Rosetta Stone. It's the most trusted language learning program available on desktop or as an app. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. And for a very limited time, Sporkful listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/sporkful. That's half off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/sporkful today. Hey, everyone. We're getting back into the flow of reheating episodes for you. We're pulling out old episodes from the deep freezer and serving them up to you for your enjoyment. Today's reheat is my interview with the legendary Guy Fieri. People still message me and ask me about this interview and talk about it even many years later. So we thought it was a great one to reshare. Now, if you have an episode you'd like us to pull out of the deep freezer, send me a message at hello@sporkful.com. Thank you and enjoy. This episode contains explicit language.
Buenos dias.
Hey, man.
What's cooking, dude?
How are you?
You know, just staying ahead of the curve. Just trying to keep it above ground.
Yeah. Today on The Sporkful, my guest is Food Network star Guy Fieri.
I like your questions because your questions aren't the same bullshit.
Ever since he was a kid, Guy's been obsessed with becoming a successful food businessman. And a lot of people don't realize this, but he was well on his way before he was ever on TV. Coming up, Guy tells us about going from the pretzel cart he and his dad made when he was 10 to opening in South Africa and Dubai. And we'll find out what people don't get about Guy.
I think everybody thinks I live on a yacht that shoots off rockets, you know, at midnight every night.
This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. As some of you may know, I hosted a Cooking Channel web series called You're Eating It Wrong. I think they still play clips from the series on TV, too. But because of that, a couple years ago, I was invited to compete on Guy's Grocery Games. That's Guy Fieri's show where you're in a supermarket and you get weird challenges, and you got to run around the store getting ingredients, and then cook a meal in 1 hour. It was a ton of fun, even though I did not come close to winning. By the way, my takeaway, if you're ever on a cooking competition show, cook something you've cooked before. That was my mistake. At least one of them. Okay, anyway, that's when I met Guy Fieri. And then in 2017, I got to talk with him for a Sporkful interview. I loved the conversation, and I want to share it again now because I've been thinking about it a lot lately as we get ready to celebrate the Sporkful's 10-year anniversary this September. I've always been struck by Guy's ambition. You probably know him mainly from his TV shows, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, or Triple D, Guy's Grocery Games, or Triple G, and more. But he considers himself a restaurateur first and foremost. Today, he has restaurants all over the world, even at sea, thanks to a deal with Carnival Cruise Lines. Now, I'm obviously nowhere near his level of success, but in a way, I'm a food business person too. I started this podcast 10 years ago in my living room after getting laid off from 6 radio jobs in 8 years. If you had told me back then that someday I'd actually be able to make a living doing this thing I love, I would have said, I'll take it and I'll never ask for anything ever again. But now that I'm here, I have ideas for like 500 new projects, new directions, new heights. Ambition is a funny thing. You need it to be successful. But it makes it hard to ever feel successful. I wondered how Guy feels about everything he's accomplished. After all, he's been building his food business empire since he was a kid. Back when he was 10, his family went on a ski trip to Tahoe. Guy's dad gave him $5 for food for the day. And Guy fell in love with the pretzels the man in the ski lodge was selling.
So this guy steams it, and he dips it in a little bit of salt, and he puts this, you put mustard on it. And I always loved flavors like that when I was a kid. I always loved salt, and I love mustard, and I love vinegars, and I love acids, and all those kind of stuff. So I ate one, and the doughiness and the chewiness, I'd never seen anything like, and I'd never been to New York City. Anyhow, I spent all my money on it. My dad says, what'd you have for lunch? One day he says, what'd you have for lunch? I said, I had pretzels. And he goes, they're 50 cents a piece. How many damn pretzels did you eat? I said, Dad, have you ever had one of these things? They're the best goddamn thing in the world. So I got and got him a pretzel, and I brought him. He goes, yeah, it's good. And I said, man, I sure would love to have a pretzel cart like that. And my dad says, well, let's make one. And my dad was always, and that's, you know, my dad's still my, you know, my best friend and my right-hand man. And he always taught me there were no boundaries. You could always be anything you want to be. And he just had to, you know, think big and go big. And I said, Dad, come on. Where am I going to get the pretzels? He says, I'll make you a deal. He says, you go find out where the pretzels come from. And when we get back home, you and I will make a pretzel cart and you can sell pretzels. And I'm not even thinking really of the business aspect. I'm just thinking unlimited pretzels. I was never a sweets guy, so this was my thing. So I go down to the pretzel dude. Now, this has been my homie for like 4 days. I've spent all my money. I bought his pretzels. I've sat there and talked to him about pretzels. And I said, hey, could you tell me where to get the pretzels? And all of a sudden, the cool went to fool. And he said, absolutely not. And I mean, total jerk about it. And I'm like, wait. I'm 10. I said, why won't you give me the thing? He says, because you're going to open a pretzel cart and then, you know, maybe be my competition. I said, I live like 500 miles away, dude. So I go back completely defeated and I go back to my parents. I think they were in the lounge. My dad says, say lounge, don't say bar. It sounds like we're drunks. So, you know, but it's after ski, you know, everybody's right, hanging sure, out sure. doing the thing, you know. So I go back and I'm completely defeated, like the bird dog that couldn't get the bird. And I tell my dad, the guy wouldn't give me the pretzel. My dad goes, now, here's what you're going to do. And this is the way we also achieve things in our family is you do not stop. You do not take no. You continue to, you know, you continue to work hard. He says, you go down there and you just hang out in that area and you wait till he closes up his shop. And then when he takes his trash and he throws it in the dumpster here where he throws his garbage away, go find the box. So there at the age of 10, I'm dumpster diving, jumping into the get the box. And I tear off the side of the box, J&J snack foods. And I run back happy, you know, like the bird dog that got the bird. And I bring it to my dad and he takes it and he writes it down. He goes, now throw this away. And so I went and threw it away. And then we went home and we spent a year. We mounted the pretzel cart on the back of the three-wheel bike, had a little camp stove that would heat up little half pans. And the half pans had steaming racks in it. And he'd put the pretzels in there and they would steam and get nice and soft. And then I sold them for 50 cents. And I sold them at the fair. I sold them at the rodeo. I sold them anywhere I could. And had my friends work for me, named it. My dad said, you know, what do you want to name it? I said, the awesome pretzel. Pretzels are awesome, right? And had a little, I was in sixth grade. I had a checking account, had a full banking system. I mean, I had the whole thing, man. I had to save my money to buy my inventory, to get my shipment in, to pick them up, to get them to the freezer company, to, you know, do all this kind of stuff. And it all started at the sixth grade.
Guy took the money he made selling pretzels and used it to get himself to France as an exchange student. He fell in love with French cuisine. He came back, graduated from UNLV with a degree in hospitality, and went to work for Stouffer's. He says he always wanted to work in corporate restaurants. At age 28, he and a partner opened the first restaurant of their own, Johnny Garlic's, a California pasta grill in Santa Rosa, where Guy still lives, a couple hours north of San Francisco. A few years after that, Guy opened Tex Wasabi's, a barbecue and sushi concept, and more restaurants followed. In fact, by the time Guy got his big TV break, winning Next Food Network star in 2006, he was already a successful restaurateur. And you know, it's such a notoriously tough business. I wanted to get a sense of what Guy is like in that role. I'm curious, like when you run a restaurant, what are the tiny details that drive you crazy?
What my pet peeves or what my things are, is you try so hard to get the food great that it really takes the wind out of the sail. It's kind of like a band creating an awesome song and then the lead mic doesn't work. You know, if you've ever been to a concert right. and then the lead singer's mic isn't working, I mean, what in the, you know, what the hell does it take to, so it's those kind of things. So bad service to me is just, I can't get it. I can't get my head around it. Dirty restaurants drive me nuts. Dirty bathrooms drive me crazy. And back in that service piece is fake service, you know. Not paying attention to what's really going on at the table and just doing the scripted rehearsal bullshit. You know, this, those kind of things. I mean, this is all I know. I've only been in the restaurant business. I've only cooked. That's all I've ever done. So I have my thing about it.
I read that you watch your own performances on TV and take notes. What are some of the things that you critique yourself on?
Well, I think I'm the one that told you this. I don't think you read shit. No,
that's not split hairs, guy. Come on.
So what are you saying, guys? Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. I had to. I didn't know what it looked like. I didn't know what I looked like on TV, you know? So I wanted to find out, like, what was my body posture and when was I catching the camera the right way and how was that? Was I pausing enough for photos, you know, for shots of the food and just all that kind of stuff. So I had to really become a student of the craft and really pay attention. And it's painful. Don't get me wrong. I'm like anybody else, I think. I hate watching myself on TV. And I'm glad you didn't follow and say you do too. But
I do too, Guy. That's a great point.
No, I meant me. Seriously. I'll be here all week. But you know, the thing is you got to pay attention to what you're doing. It's like you got to self-edit. You got to self-reflect. You have to. I mean, I think that is what we have to do to continue to stay in the game.
Coming up, much more with Guy Fieri. When I told friends I was interviewing him, a lot of people had the same question. Is the guy we see on TV some kind of character, a persona, or is that what he's actually like? After the break, we'll try to find out. And I'll ask him for some business advice. Stick around.
A delicious word from our sponsors.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, a business tripper, or a long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. They've got over 7,000 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels, and you will get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. I especially love those Cambria Hotels. They have locally inspired hotel bars with all kinds of specialty cocktails, downtown locations right in the center of all the action. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces. That way, if you're a business traveler, you'll be able to get all your work done. On-site restaurants, fantastic. And then at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles and great pools for the whole family and spacious rooms. I mean, if you have kids, you understand the importance of the pool. If you stay at a hotel with a pool, almost nothing else matters. Fortunately, all the Choice Hotels take care of all the other stuff too, but I mean, a pool is a great start. Whatever kind of vacation you're going on, whatever kind of travel you're doing, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. If you're like me, the first thing you do when traveling is check out what's happening with the local food scene, right? And as I've been planning my big book tour and live podcast tapings all around the country, man, I am very excited to eat my way across the nation. There's Atlanta, there's Miami, and so many more. Getting a taste of local food is the best way to get to know the local culture. And if you travel, you know that's how it's done. The Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know. I enjoy a nice glass of wine, but I don't pretend to be an expert in wine. I usually just want a wine that's high quality, delicious, and not too expensive. And to me, that's Bogle Family Vineyards. And here's the thing about Bogle. This is a third generation family-owned winery from California that makes exceptional wines for about $10 a bottle. Bogle wines consistently earn Best Buy designations and high ratings from wine enthusiasts. And let me tell you something. The folks at Wine Enthusiast, they drink a lot of wine. They drink a lot of fancy, expensive wine. And yet they still keep giving great ratings to Bogle. And Bogle Vineyards has so many different kinds of wine. Whatever your mood, whatever you're eating, there's a wine for you. They got this great Pinot Grigio that's crisp and fruity, goes well with spicy foods, with fish. They have a classic Chardonnay that's balanced, amazing with a pork tenderloin or butter chicken. I like to take that Chardonnay and do what Jacques Pepin taught me, a couple of ice cubes in your glass of Bogle. If Jacques Pepin says it's okay, then it's okay. And there's the Bogle Pinot Noir, refined and elegant with bright fruit and about as food-friendly as a red wine can be. You're not going to believe it's only $10. Neither will your friends if you tell them. So pick up a few bottles of Bogle wherever you buy your favorite wines. Please drink responsibly. Are you ready for warmer weather? I know I am. But is your wardrobe ready? I just stocked up on spring and summer clothing at Quince. And let me tell you something. I'm feeling great about everything I got. I got a couple of short sleeve button down shirts, polo shirt, some shorts. Everything feels great. It's super high quality. And I can't believe how much stuff I got at a reasonable price. Quince has all the seasonal must-haves like 100% European linen shirts from $30, performance polos, and versatile flow-knit activewear. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. Whatever you need for the spring and summer, Quince has your back. Upgrade your wardrobe. Go to quince.com/sporkful for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/sporkful to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/sporkful. I just got a very wonderful shipment of goodies from the folks at Reese's. And let me tell you something. These people remain the absolute worldwide leaders in bringing together chocolate and peanut butter. Of course, we know that peanut butter cups remain transcendent. But have you tried the Reese's Sticks? They're wafers with peanut butter in between each wafer, all coated in chocolate. I mean, the combination of sweet chocolate and salty peanut butter just brings people joy, and the folks at Reese's do it better than anyone. So shop Reese's Peanut Butter Cups now at a store near you, found wherever candy is sold. Welcome back to The Sporkful. I'm Dan Pashman. My cookbook, Anything's Possible, is out now. You can get it wherever books are sold. You can even get signed copies. All that information is at sporkful.com/book. And our Sporkful Live Anything's Possible tour continues. I'll be in D.C. this Tuesday in conversation with Patty Hinnich. Then in 2 weeks, I'll be at WHYY in Philly with Kehlani Palmisano, followed by Boston with Dan Souza, and then on to the West Coast. Get tickets and info at sporkful.com/tour. Thanks. Now, back to Guy Fieri. There's no shortage of opinions about Guy. It seems for every person who'd love to spend all day eating donkey sauce in Flavortown, there's another who gets sick of the thought. Here's Bobby Moynihan doing his impression of Guy on SNL.
The key to Super Bowl food is having a theme. So what better way to get ready for the Giants versus the Pats than with a giant pat of butter? It's what the French call an amuse-bouche.
Guy called the impression hysterical. He asked Bobby Moynihan to do it in a video for Guy's son's 18th birthday. But Guy doesn't have as much of a sense of humor about his more pointed critics. If you know one thing about him, it's probably that when he opened his restaurant in Times Square, he got an epically bad review from Pete Wells in the New York Times. In other interviews, Guy's basically said he thinks Wells was overly harsh because he was trying to get attention for himself to advance his own career. In 2016, 4 years after opening, the restaurant grossed $17 million, according to the trade publication Restaurant Business. But the next year, it closed. Still, Guy's business and brand keep expanding. A few months before this interview, I texted Guy to try to set it up, and he said he wasn't free because he was on a month-long road trip with his family. And I thought, oh, that's nice. I'm glad Guy's taking a break from work. Then I find out he has a new show on Food Network, Guy's Family Road Trip. Soon after, he launched another one, Guy's Big Project. He just keeps going. So you started your pretzel cart when you were 10. You're turning 50 soon. And now you're opening restaurants in South Africa and Dubai. I mean, I got to say, Guy, like, that's a hell of a 40-year climb, you know? And you've been so you've been so driven and so single-minded for so long. I mean, it seems to me that there's a fire inside of you that's not in most normal people, you know? And I, in thinking about this, getting ready to talk with you, I know that some people think that, like, your shirts and your cars with the flames on them are kind of like a gimmick or something, but I actually think that those images are quintessentially you. Like, even your hair is kind of reminiscent of a fire. Like, where do you think
I think there's way too much stereotyping. There's a picture of me in a flame shirt that everybody loves. I get that picture sent to me. I mean, when we do fan mail, it's the picture they send more than anything. And I think people want to love the shirt more because I hate the shirt. And I don't know what the shirt. Well, we had opened a barbecue restaurant, and this is way before even Food Network. We'd opened a barbecue restaurant, and that was one of the shirts that we had. I don't know where I got the shirt or what happened. But God damn, I hate that shirt. But the funny thing is people want to make a story of what something is when they don't understand it. Yes, I work hard, and yes, I love my cars, and yes, I love to go to football games, and I love rock concerts, and I love anything, you know, crazy, except for jumping out of airplanes, which is a whole other story. But I love all that stuff. So I just let people, I mean, people are just going to say whatever they're going to say. They're going to go on their own way about, you know, oh yeah, man, it's the, he's, everything's flamed at his house. I bet you so, you know, and I just kind of go, okay, you know, all right, well, right. You know, think what you, I mean, what do I wear? I wear shorts and tennis shoes and a t-shirt every day, and unless I have to go to work, and I typically don't shave that often. I cook every single day. I mean, I cook in the morning for my, my kid, I make him cook now. My youngest, he has to cook his own breakfast. Now, that was the new deal, sixth grade. But I cook every night. It's my goal. I mean, like, I'm already thinking today. We already had a little conversation, like, starting to plan, like, what's out in the garden, what I'm going to cook. So that's kind of way. It's a lot more mellow and a lot more simplistic than I think everybody believes. I think everybody thinks I live on a yacht that shoots off rockets, you know, at midnight every night.
Right, right. Well, I think, you know, look, the way that I think about it, when I started doing TV, and this is already kind of a ridiculous premise for a question because clearly you and I are not in the same orbit when it comes to food media success, but...
You've done pretty... Listen, I watch your show. We talked about that.
You're very kind. I appreciate it.
No, you're doing great. Seriously, you know how many requests we get to do podcasts and stuff. I mean, we're all so busy and so forth, but you're a great guy. And I told you this when I met you, the way you carry yourself, the information you have, that's where it comes from. So, and certain people have it and certain people don't have it. And it's tough when people don't have it that want to have it. And it's tough when people have it that don't get to use it as much as they can use it.
Right.
Sounds like
right.
Some weird riddle, doesn't it?
No, I understand exactly what you're saying. And I know the way that I thought of it when I first started out was to say, like, okay, I'm going to pick a couple of aspects of my personality and a couple of aspects of my approach to food, and I'm going to magnify those on TV because I think that's what will make for good television. There's other parts of my personality and other parts of my approach to food that if I went on TV and talked about those or did that, it would just be boring. So from that, I created what I think of as a sort of a character that is myself. It's not fake. It is rooted in part of who I really am. But when I go on TV, I think of myself as sort of playing a character that is myself. Does that sound familiar at all? Does that make any sense?
To me, no. I mean, that's not. I don't have much of a filter. I'm not trying to give anybody. I'm not a TV person. I never wanted to be a TV person, but I didn't know any different. All I knew to do when I got on television, when I got on the Food Networks, all I needed to do was be me and talk about food and be what I am in food. And then, fortunately, I guess with the escalation of how things went in my career, I didn't really have to worry about filtering, but I don't sell people a line of crap on the show. If I don't like it, you don't see it. And if I don't like the restaurant, it won't air.
I guess I when people say, and this, they say this about a lot of celebrities, like, what are they really like?
And, oh, no, we all know the same thing.
Right, right. I mean, look, every human being, whether or not you're a celebrity, understands the idea of being on. Like, you got an important work meeting. You're going to behave differently than you would if you were drunk at a bar with your friends. Like, we all put up a front depending or accentuate certain parts of our personalities. You know, that's what I'm saying.
That's a truth. When I go into my regimen of work, there's no staying up late. There's no going out having cocktails. There's no any of that.
I can actually testify because when you came to do a book event in my hometown, I texted you and said, hey, let's go get a drink after your book event. And you said, I can't do it. I got a 6 a.m. call tomorrow morning.
Yeah, I am. Work is work. I mean, to me, work is like, it's such a discipline. It's such a responsibility. I got people paying for me to do this. I got people staying up on Friday nights to watch it. I got a thing to do. You know, it's the same thing with cooking. It's exactly the same responsibility. I have friends coming over for dinner. I mean, last night I got home. My wife and I are working on this new project, and she was picking our son up from soccer, and I was late getting out of the meeting to get home, and I had 29 minutes to get dinner on the table. And I came home, and I did quinoa and lamb chops and spinach and cauliflower, and I busted all that, and I am working with focus and got it done, and that's the way I do things.
I know that Sammy Hagar is a close friend of yours. And that's an interesting pairing, I think. I mean, I think on the surface, people would say, like, oh, yeah, you guys both kind of have this rock star vibe. You guys both have not the same look, but...
He's the one to blame. He's the one to blame for mine.
Yeah. But the thing that I think that maybe people are less likely to associate with both of you is that you're both such successful businessmen. I mean, people should know, I mean, Sammy has made way more money from food, from his lines of liquors and his restaurants than he ever did from music. He sold 80% of his tequila brand for something like $80 million.
I remember the day it happened. I remember where I was. I remember the moment. I remember the phone call. I remember the whole thing. And I just about fell in the street. You know, I was up in Seattle shooting. But no, he is. Sammy is... I think he's probably more driven at 70 than he was at, you know, at 30. So, yeah, he's a great example.
What's the best business advice he ever gave you?
Boy, he's given me a lot. I think it would be don't react too fast. Don't jump at it too fast. Really stand back and evaluate it. You know who the players are. You know, when you get ready to make a big deal, when you get ready to make a big acquisition, when you get ready to, to change a direction, you got to be really clued in on who you're with and where you're at. I mean, I just called him the other day about a big thing that I'm thinking of embarking on. But he doesn't give it to you. You got to understand, he doesn't give it to you in like business terms. He gives it in Sammy cool terms. Like, yeah, right on, man. So what you got to do is you got to make sure, and I can't believe I'm doing a Sammy act. But he's just cool. Right. I mean, he's just cool. And he's so goddamn smart. You know, you look at those deals. So he goes and sells Cabo Wabo, and then he does Sammy's Beach Bar Rum. And then he goes off and does another one. The dude just can, I'm like, it's hard to keep up.
It's hard to keep up. That line really stuck with me. The idea that someone as successful as Guy Fieri could ever feel like he was falling behind. The website Munchies did a long profile of Guy. In it, Sammy Hagar talks about what he learned when he rose to rock stardom in the 80s and how it applies to Guy. Sammy says, quote, "The stuff that drives you is not as fulfilling as people might think it is to be a celebrity. It's one of those things that's addicting, and you feel like as soon as you sit around for too long, you're like, oh man, I'm going to lose it. You're afraid of losing your magic, so you keep pushing yourself and saying, oh, I'm going to do that interview, that TV show, that other cookbook. You sit there and go, why am I doing this? You question yourself all the time. It's a bottomless pit, fame and fortune. I'm telling you from my point of view because I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about Guy. You can just take everything I said and say that this is what Guy said because if he really thought about it, that's why you keep rolling like that. He's just like me. He'll never stop." That quote was on my mind when I asked Guy this question.
Having that kind of fire inside can be a tremendous strength, and clearly it's helped drive you to tremendous success. But I do wonder, you know, like in other ways, perhaps that fire can be a curse because you're never satisfied for long. Do you feel like you're able to enjoy your success?
Oh, I enjoy it. I enjoy it tremendously. I do suffer from they nailed it on the head. I do suffer from working too much, but I have the balance better than I've ever had it. I mean, there was a few years there that I was really just pedal to the metal, man. But it was also, you know, it's also kind of like launching a rocket. That beginning trajectory that you get really is important, you know, how that works. So, but no, I enjoy it now. We got a lot of great things that the family gets to share, and the times we get to share, and the things we get to do, and the, you know, setting up the future for my sons, you know, and for my nephew. I lost my sister to cancer 7 years ago, and so I have my nephew as well, who just went off to his first year of college, and, you know, just having the resources to be able to support them and help them, although they all have to work and all that, not support them like, here's just money, but just having those things, you know, being able to... I'll tell you the most important one, man. The town I grew up in is this little town called Ferndale, and it's about 4 hours north of where I live here in the wine country. And I wanted to have that house my whole life. That was where I was raised. That's where I wanted. And I didn't want my parents ever to give me the house because I wanted them to spend their own money. It was their retirement. They put all the money in the house. They should sell it. They should live off their retirement, blah, 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 blah. But now in my lifetime, I get to own that house and preserve that house for my kids to have, for their kids to have, to know that I have done enough in my career that we will be able to have things like keeping our family home. That is just it, man. That is whenever I question how hard have I worked and have I worked too much, I can look at that house and say, no, I did what I was supposed to do.
This is, of course, a little bit of an oversimplification, but it seems to me that these days the food world is divided in much the same way that our country is divided. You have your higher-end food scene in the cities, and then you have the food everywhere else. I was reading an interview with you where the writer was kind of giving you a hard time about donkey sauce. Saying, I mean, I know people make a comment about the name, but then he was saying it's not healthy or whatever it is. And you said, look, it's aioli. You want me to call it aioli? It's aioli. Which I loved that response. And I would like to propose to you, Guy, that we refer to the cultural divide in the country and in the world of food today as the donkey sauce aioli divide. Can we call it that?
That, I mean, yes, I'm worried about, I mean, watching what's happening in our country right now just drives me crazy. I don't know that I would put it on as much of a scale as what's going on in the world, but I think that as long as what you're doing and as long as what you're believing and as long as what you're giving is not hurting anybody and is not hurting yourself, then you should be allowed to go as you please. You know, I'm talking in the world of food.
Right. But I wonder, how does that divide factor into your thinking about your businesses and your brand?
I don't understand.
I mean, your original pitch to Food Network in your trial tape, you know, Real Food for Real People, which came at a time when Food Network was mostly high-end chefs from big cities, and you were very astute and savvy to come in and say, look, there's a big segment of the country that's not getting the attention it should be getting.
Don't give me any of that credit. I didn't know what the no, listen, I'm a blue jean, cowboy boot, tennis shoe, dirt, you know. I didn't know any of this stuff. And I never went in with like this, hey, this is the time to strike. But if what you're saying is, where is it in the model? I still think it's real food for real people. I think that just depends on who you are.
I know that in your personal life, you're very passionate about organic, simple, fresh food. I know you're working on making your ranch self-sufficient. I hear you're even getting into beekeeping.
You got to see me in the bee suit, yeah. Dude. That is the gnarliest thing in the world.
Yeah,
but it's awesome.
Well, let me just ask you.
Go ahead.
But at the same time, you have this growing corporate restaurant empire. And I know that there are some organic components and simpler foods, but that's not the biggest part of the focus on the menus in a lot of your restaurants.
Would I love to have a completely organic restaurant that did just 5 items a day, only what was available? When I lived in France, when I was an exchange student in France, you would go to a home when you're in a town that didn't have a restaurant, and you'd go in and whatever that family was eating, that's what you would sit down and eat. We laugh about it. My wife and I laugh about it all the time because I said, she goes, where are you going to end up? You know, and she loves to tell people, I said, I'm going to end up in Mexico, little village. I put the red flag out on the porch. That means that we're open tonight. And when you come, it's whatever is being served, you know, because whatever is available, that's how you eat down in, you know, this little village that we go and stay in. That's what you eat is what's available. So would I love to do that? Yeah. Can you sell that in Las Vegas? Not in my position, you can't. You know, that's not exactly what translates. Plus, one of the biggest branding factors that I have is the representation of Triple D. And Triple D is everything of the blue collar America, not just blue collar, but it's this representation. So no, I don't get to exactly do what I want to do. Do I move the needle a little bit every time? Yeah, I do.
A couple years ago, Guy and some partners started an organic winery. The announcement got a lot of attention in the food world because it seemed like such a departure from donkey sauce. Was this Guy's attempt to move the needle a little more? Maybe, but the approach was pretty different. Unlike just about every other new business Guy rolls out, the winery doesn't have his name on it. It's called Hunt and Ride, after his sons Hunter and Ryder. The wines are only on the menu at a handful of Guy's restaurants. In other interviews, he said this winery is especially personal for him. I asked him why.
I like wine. No. you know what it, you know
that's
what
good
it is?
You can stop right there, that guy. That's a good enough reason.
it's something. I never knew how hard it was to start in the wine business. I never had a clue, knowing that you come from, you know, the beginning of the year and you see the buds start to come out on the vines, and then you look at and you start to calculate how it's going to work, and you're wondering what the weather report is and when we're getting rain and when we're not getting rain and where we're at on trimming and what we're cutting back and how this harvest is going to go, when we're going to harvest and where we're at, and, you know, then just all this stuff going on. It was just something that I never thought I would ever have the resources or the time or the organization or the team to do. And when I finally did, it was like, it was another one of those milestones. You just go, oh, so this is what it all feels. You know, this is where you were going with that.
Right. So. Final question. And this is confidential now, Guy, but I am thinking of starting my own food business.
Awesome.
I want to
I won't tell anybody.
Good. Thank you. Don't worry. No one's going to hear this podcast. I want to try
I'm tweeting this. I'm tweeting this out that this is going to happen. This is better. There's a line of people waiting to have meetings with outside right. the door. So.
I want to invent a new pasta shape. What advice, as I embark upon this business venture, what advice do you have for me?
Here's my thing about pasta. When you're going to eat pasta, you got to eat really goddamn great pasta. I'm talking air dried. I'm talking great flour. I'm talking done the right way. So that's the first and the foremost. And the other factor of it is pasta has got to have texture in my world. One of my favorite pastas in the world is radiatori. You like radiatori?
Yeah, like that's like the little, looks like an accordion.
It's called the little radiator.
Yeah, right, right.
Okay. And the sauce just nestles itself down in there. So when you take a bite of one radiatori, you get this bite that explodes with all of the sauce and the flavor in it. I'm a texture guy. I'm really into the big textures that you get from those types of pastas. And typically, those are extruded pastas where the pasta is pressed through a brass die versus sheeted out like a linguine or tagliatelle or parpadelle or one of those. So I think where you're at, my advice would be really good pasta dough and extruded, and good luck after that.
Okay.
Bucatini's another one of my favorites.
Oh, it is good. Yeah. I love a, what do you call the, a cavatappi.
Cavatappi's fantastic. But see, you're in the right zone. I mean, if you're really serious about talking about this business piece, what I want to know is why aren't the quinoas, the rice, all of these non-gluten pastas, why are they only coming out in penne, fettuccine, and spaghetti? So where's that business? Where is the radiatori in the quinoa pasta?
Smart.
Could be your angle, my homie. Could be your angle.
That is Food Network star Guy Fieri. And if you want to know what Guy's been up to lately, well, in the first few months of the coronavirus pandemic, he raised more than $20 million for restaurant workers in need. Of course, his shows on Food Network are Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, Guy's Grocery Games, and more. This episode is produced by me, along with senior producer
Emma Morgenstern
and producer
Andre Sohero.
Our editor is
Tracy Samuelson.
The show is mixed by
Jared O'Connell.
Special thanks to Ann Sani and Dan Charles, who produced and edited the original version of this episode. Music help from Black Label Music. The Sporkful is a production of Stitcher. Our executive producers are Chris Bannon and Daisy Rosario. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Hannah Knox in Estes Park, Colorado, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.
The team that produces The Sporkful today includes me, along with managing producer
Emma Morgenstern
and senior producer
Andres O'Hara.
Our engineer is
Jared O'Connell.
The Sporkful is a production of Stitcher Studios. Our executive producers are Nora Ritchie and Colin Anderson. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.